supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Before returning home this evening to take inventory of Halloween treats, gaze overhead to see if the moon is playing a trick. Joining me is Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, this sounds like a scary assignment.
Well, the good thing about this being this kind of assignment is that you don't really have to do very much. Today, the moon is one day old. Now, that's not the best for Halloween. You know, typically on Halloween, you'd like to have maybe a full moon because that looks the scariest, and it's the perfect moon for the witch flying in front of the moon, and you see the silhouette. Well, that's not going to happen tonight because the moon is one day old. So what that actually means is that the moon sets almost immediately after sunset, okay? But the other thing is that tonight, the moon is at its farthest distance from the Earth for the entire year.
Oh, it's very small then.
Well, you would think it would be very small, but if you actually try to measure the difference, it's almost negligible. You can't really see it, and if you wanted to be able to measure it, you'd have to have the moon either in some sort of a measurement device and making those measurements steadily from day to day to day. Or the other thing is you'd have to have some object that was close enough to the moon that you could use it for comparison measurement. Now, the same is true for what I'm now dubbing the mini moon. This mini moon, when the moon is furthest at its furthest distance from Earth, and it apparently should be its smallest. But my point is that there's a very special optical illusion, a trick that our brain plays on us when we see the full moon close to the horizon, near objects of known size. The moon appears to be really, really big, and we can see it in photographs, you can see it with the naked eye, all those sorts of things. And as the moon then rises up to its highest point in the night sky, it may look smaller. Well, the moon at the horizon and at that high point, the zenith point, is actually the same size. But the optical illusion of having it near objects of known size when it's close to the horizon makes us see it, makes our brain see it as being that much larger. If we were to actually measure it at the horizon and then measure overhead, either at supermoon or mini moon, we'd find that the moon will appear to be the same angular size.
So let's park Halloween. Now give us some context for the holidays ahead.
Well, actually, tomorrow is another holiday, and that holiday is All Saints' Day. So if you think about Halloween as being that one night during the entire year when ghosts and goblins and evil spirits and all sorts of other evil incantations are running about, well, we need a counter to that so that we can get all of those ghosts and goblins and evil incantations to go back to where they came from. And so that happens the very next day, November 1st, All Saints' Day, only to be followed the very next day by a follow-up to All Saints' Day as All Souls' Day.
Wednesday.
So I think we need two of these, All Saints and All Souls, to push all the evil things back into the wherever they came from for Halloween, and I think maybe also to sell our stomachs after all the candy we've eaten from Halloween.
And then Sunday, we're pushing the clocks back.
Yes, indeed. We are pushing the clocks back. And indeed, we're right at that time of year that's smack halfway between the first day of fall, the first day of winter. So Halloween marks that cross-quarter day. And immediately following that, we move our clocks back 1 hour. So this Sunday coming up, 2 a.m., we'll push our clocks back to 1, and we'll be back on standard time again. Now, all of this is a process that's driving us right toward the winter solstice. And as I've mentioned several times before, what I love about this is we're really getting all of that dark time out of the way so that as we get to the solstice, we're actually working our way back towards spring.
As you've invoked dark time, here's a challenge. Tell us about the recent kerfuffle over data pertaining to dark matter.
You know, we've talked about dark energy before as being one of the hidden or invisible forces that's driving the universe apart. When we look at the most distant galaxies of our universe, they seem to be receding away from each other at higher and higher velocities. Now, this has been counter to earlier theories, not so long ago, that the mass of the universe would force the universe's expansion to slow down, stop, and even cause this entire universe to begin to collapse again. But as we're observing these most distant galaxies, we don't see that slowdown. We see this expansion, and we see the acceleration.
What's providing the thrust?
Well, what's thought is that it's dark energy that's providing the thrust. It is an energy that exists in the, how do we say it, the gaps, the voids between clusters or strings of clusters of galaxies, pushing the universe outward. But it's been very, very difficult, in fact, impossible, to actually get a real grip on dark energy and its companion, dark matter. So we haven't been able to identify exactly what dark energy is. Although, when we begin to try to test for its existence, a few years ago, one group of observers studied a certain kind of star, a type 1A supernova. Now, this is the type of supernova in which a star explodes. And using these supernovae, these researchers were able to identify that, indeed, there seemed to be this dark energy affecting how the galaxy is expanding. Well, when they did their study, they examined 70 of these stars. And that was enough to gain them really, really significant attention. In fact, they won a Nobel Prize for this in 2011 for this work that they'd done back in 1999. Well, a new group of researchers has looked at over 700 of those same type. In fact, they've looked at 740 of that same type of star, and they've come up with a slightly different understanding of what's happening. In fact, when researchers look at data and try to identify the strength of the evidence of that data, they work it out to a series of decimal places beyond the decimal point. And this measurement of accuracy is called sigma. So the highest level of accuracy is 6 sigma. So if you're at 5 sigma or 6 sigma, this is a highly significant observation. You've got the accuracy out to the farthest degree you can take it almost. So it means that it's almost irrefutable. Well, when you look at this larger data set, what's being found is that the possibility that these type stars actually are revealing the existence of dark energy is down to only 3 sigma, or perhaps only 1 sigma, depending how you look at the data. Well, what this does is it shakes our sense of confidence in the previous work, especially if you look at the difference in the sample size. So you could say that this recent examination is a much more statistically significant sample size. Now, it doesn't mean that we have to throw that out, because there are other factors that go into helping us identify that dark energy does exist along with the supernova that are in question.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.